The English Civil Wars, 1639 through 1660. The Army versus Parliament, March to May, 1647, Part 1. Now, last time I went through the whole litany on the dates as to what happened on each particular date. What I'm going to do now is go back and begin with March the 21st, 1647, and then begin marching to this point where there's this significant change. And this is going to take several shows. So let's begin with what sets this off. On March the 21st, 1647, a petition was circulated amongst the officers setting forth the officers' objections to the proposed scheme by Parliament for disbanding the army. First, they said, whereas the necessity of the exigence of the war hath put upon us many actions, which the law would not warrant, nor have we acted in a time of settled peace, we humbly desire that before our disbanding a full and sufficient provision be made by the ordinance of Parliament, to which royal assent may be desired for our indemnity and security in such cases. It is very common in English history that at the end of a war, an ordinance of Parliament is passed absolving everyone in the army of whatever they did. Second, the auditors and commissioners may be speedily appointed and authorized to repair to the headquarters of this army to audit and state our accompts, as well as all former services, as for our service in this army, and that before disbanding the army, satisfaction may be given to the petitioners for their arrears, so that the charge, trouble, and loss of time, which we must otherwise necessarily undergo in attendance for obtaining them, may be prevented. And what they're asking for is they want their pay. They haven't been paid for a while, and they've spent a lot of time in other things, and so they believe before they do anything, they should pay them first. Third, those that have voluntarily served the Parliament in the late wars may not hereafter be compelled by press or otherwise to serve as soldiers out of this kingdom, nor those who have served as horsemen may be compelled to press to serve on foot in future case. Parliament wants to take this army, have some volunteers, and send them to fight the Irish. They're not happy about that. And they're not going to be required to do that. That's where you have the word press in there. And they're trying to make sure that the cavalry people are protected, the infantry people are protected, and particularly the cavalry aren't going to be turned into infantry. Number four, that such is this army as have lost their limbs, and their wives and children of such have been slain in the service, and such officers or soldiers as have sustained losses or have been prejudiced in their estates by adhering to the Parliament or in the persons by sickness or imprisonment under the enemy may have such allowances and satisfaction that may be agreed to justice and equity. So for soldiers that have lost limbs, property, family members, something should be done as well. And then number five, that till the army be disbanded, as aforesaid, some course may be taken for the supply therein of monies, whereby we may be enabled to discharge our quarters, so that we may not necessarily be for food beholding to the Parliament's enemies, burdensome to our friends, or oppressive to the country, whose preservation we have always endeavored, and in whose happiness we should rejoice. So they're asking for money so they can continue to be fed and taken care of till this is all straightened out. Doesn't exactly seem like, you know, really extreme. You want your money back and you don't want to be forced to go to another war. Now, moderate as these demands were, Lord Fairfax was directed at once to put a stop to any further proceedings in that petition and send up Lieutenant General Hammond, Colonel Robert Hammond, Colonel Lilburn, and Colonel Pride, as well as Lieutenant Colonel Grime, who were concerned in promoting it, to answer for their conduct to the bar of the House of Commons. On March the 30th, the House of Commons passed a declaration condemning the petition as tending to put the army into a distemper and mutiny. I always like that. A distemper and mutiny. And declaring that those who continue to promote it should be proceeded against as enemies of the state and disturbers of the public peace. So you can see how now we have this agitation, which is really problematic for Parliament because there isn't another armed group of people. And if you think you're going to ask for volunteers to come and fight the new model army who have just won the war, I don't think that's going to happen. So Parliament is really believing that they're superior and that these people will just bow down. On April the 15th, six parliamentary commissioners were sent to Saffron Walden to confer with Fairfax and his officers on the engagement of the body of soldiers destined for the service in Ireland. The result of their mission showed a general unwillingness in both officers and soldiers to accept the terms offered. The officers in general maintained a somewhat neutral attitude, declining emphatically to engage themselves, but promising to promote and not hinder the engagement of their soldiers. A few of the higher officers undertook to go in person, but in more than one regiment, soldiers refused to follow their examples of their commanders and mutinied when they were drawn out to march. Left to themselves by the indecision of their officers, the soldiers began to act without them. In a paper entitled An Apology of All the Private Soldiers in Sir Thomas Fairfax's Army to Their Commission Officers, they stated their grievances and called on their officers to stand by them for redress of these wrongs. Quote, "The Lord put a spirit of courage into your heart that you may stand fast in your integrity that you have manifested to us your soldiers. And we do declare to you that if any of you shall not, he shall be marked with the brand of infamy forever as a traitor to his country and an enemy to this army. We have been quiet and peaceable in obeying all orders and commands. Yet now we have just cause to tell you, if we are not relieved of our grievances, we shall be forced to that, which we pray God to divert and keep you and your hearts upright." End of quote. They're not only not backing down, now they're getting really dangerous. A somewhat similar letter was at the same time addressed to Fairfax, Oliver Cromwell, and Skippon. Now Skippon, on April the 30th, delivered to the House of Commons his letter. It was signed by the representatives of the 8 regiments of cavalry and presented by 3 troopers. Skippon presided, and one after the other, the chief officers gave an account of the temper of their respective regiments and their reception of the votes of Parliament. Each regiment made a return of its grievances, and by consent of the great majority of the officers, Lambert and the others were appointed to collect from these regimental returns a summary of the common grievances of the whole army to be presented to the commissioners and then transmitted to Parliament. Over these returns, a number of disputes broke out. More than once, varying returns were presented by different officers of the same regiment. Lieutenant Colonel Jackson and Captain White quarreled violently over the account presented from Fairfax's own infantry regiment. There were disputes also to the regiments of Colonel Graves, Sir Hardress Waller, Colonel Sheffield, as the spokesman of the minority willing to accept the terms offered by Parliament, objected to the presence of private soldiers and fell out with Colonel Hammond and Colonel Whaley. Skippon had the greatest difficulty in maintaining order. More than once he urged the officers, quote, "to hear one another with sobriety, to forbear acclamations and to speak with moderation, or else be silent. God knows it is a very great pressure on my spirit to hear and observe such clashings and jarrings amongst you. I'm sure there can be no good coming of it." End of quote. It was finally proposed that 2 of the commissioners should go up to London to represent the desires of the army to Parliament and to remove any misrepresentations which might be made of the action of the officers. In accordance with this desire and in obedience to a similar order from Parliament, Cromwell and Fleetwood were sent up to London with an elaborate report signed by all 4 commissioners. Cromwell presented this report to the House of Commons on May the 21st, expressing his belief that the soldiers would disband when ordered, but would certainly not engage to go to Ireland. The House replied by some minor concessions to the demands of the soldiers, but made no further addition to the 8 weeks' pay before promised. Now, I'm going to stop here because we need to talk about one other little thing, and that is Cromwell's health. Last year, in 1646, when the Earl of Essex died on September the 14th, you know, there was a funeral and a variety of other things, and it was shortly after Essex's funeral that Oliver Cromwell, whom the Earl had condemned as an incendiary, fell ill and for weeks on end was unable to attend the House of Commons, was deeply depressed, and by his own account believed he was near death. Dismayed by the influence which Lilburne and his friends were exerting over the army, and Lilburne is the one who's really pushing them to the extreme point of view, and distressed by attacks on him for criticizing a petition which the ordinary soldiers had presented to Parliament, and for assuring members that the army would disband and lay down their arms at their door whensoever they should command them. Cromwell, for a time, even considered going abroad to fight in a Protestant army on the continent. When he did appear in the House of Commons and spoke of the nation's new troubles, he would weep bitterly, Clarendon said, and appeared the most afflicted man in the world. At the beginning of May, Cromwell had sufficiently recovered to be appointed one of the commissioners sent by Parliament to hear the complaints of the army. He and Skippon had sent out accordingly to Saffron Walden, as we've seen, where they met the soldiers. The grievances of the soldiers, their demands for pay, the cessation of unwarranted attacks on their conduct, were not unreasonable, though Skippon felt it was necessary to rebuke some of the speakers in a vehement manner, as you heard. Cromwell, while accepting the grievances were not unjustified, urged the officers to be patient and circumspect, to lend their support to Parliament rather than to blame it unequivocally for their misfortunes, to respect the authority under which they all now served. They evidently listened to his words in very gloomy silence, many of them believing that Parliament would shortly issue orders to disband the army so they could get rid of them once and for all. On May the 25th, it was learned that the Presbyterians in the House of Commons, bent on denying soldiers' demands for liberty of conscience, that's the ordinance of protection, had carried the day and the army was indeed to be disbanded. It is at this point that Cromwell, the great independent, now made a fateful decision. He had pleaded the army's cause, but never in sympathy with its wilder spirits. He had always earnestly tried to reconcile it with Parliament. In doing so, he satisfied neither side. Lilburne accused him of being under the malignant influence of those two unworthy, covetous earthworms, Fan and St. John, and betraying the army. Parliament distrusted him and blamed him for the army's unrest. At this point, at last, recognizing the impossibility of reconciliation, he decided to throw his lot in with the army. So this is the situation that we were looking at briefly last week. And you can see how it has moved to this point. And besides just the army versus Parliament, the clash between Cromwell and with Lilburne and others who did not follow his point of view. And then he has now decided Parliament is nuts and is going to move in and protect the army. So we'll pick up here and continue on till we get this all straightened out, because the king's going to come in here pretty quickly. Now, the sources for this: History of England by Thornton, Lockyer, and Smith, Cromwell, Lord Protector by Fraser, Fairfax by Wilson, Cromwell by Wedgwood, Cavaliers versus Roundheads, English Civil War, 1642-49 by Hibbert, and the English Civil War, 1640-1660 by Warden. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.